Hi, everyone. Welcome. I know the hour and a half after lunch, everyone would like to go take a bathroom break, including me. I want to talk to you a little bit about what I've been working on and sort of my goal for the next decade to 15 years before I get to retire. So this study sort of emerged out of, I'm forwarding, but it doesn't work. There we go. Evolution and faith. Everyone here already knows this, speaking to the choir, but this is still a huge, huge issue for undergraduate students. I teach evolution and ecology. Oh, I get to teach evolution and global climate change to first year freshmen. So I get the very exciting experience of doing that. So 2014, I went on sabbatical. And my whole goal for sabbatical was I was transitioning into evolution education research. I'm a biologist in the biology department. And I wanted to understand all the research that exists out there on how to teach evolution. And I did a variety of things, a lot of reading, a lot of visiting of Christian universities and environments. I went to Dozer at AAAS, went and spoke with Colossian Forum, spoke with BioLogos. They were already on campus, so Point Loma Nazarene. And basically got done with my sabbatical research and found out that, nothing exists out there that's data-driven. Everybody is doing stuff. They're great things. And nobody can prove to me on paper with numbers or evidence that these things actually are the best practices. So that's when I decided a long-term goal of mine was to identify ways for the Christian Academy to help college students reconcile mainstream science with their faith. What are the best practices to develop activities and interventions that promote understanding and acceptance and to equip students to engage intellectually and hospitably? And that's a big goal, but you know, you got to do something in your last 15 years of academia, right? So my goal would be to accomplish that with many colleagues and with some research money. So what I did learn is that there's a lot of research out there on how do we teach evolution to resistant students. There's research on increased understanding of evolution does not mean increased acceptance. A lot of data on that. The strong association between understanding what the nature of science is and then understanding evolution. Positive relationship between evolution acceptance and cognitive flexibility or openness to believe change, which I'll get a little bit more into that. And that we need to be thinking about a learner's conceptual ecology because this influences their learning. What is their worldview? What are their religious beliefs? What are the views about the nature of religion? Contextual factors such as their religious background, pressure from parents. All these things need to be considered in the evolution classroom. Great. Love it. This research is 20, 25 years old. But what about the teaching a Christian about evolution? Like, well, I want to mix the religion with the evolution and the faith. How do we teach evolution and help these kids maintain their faith? That's what I was looking for. And that's what I wasn't finding data on. Very, very recently, in the last couple of years, people are starting to talk about this idea of this metaphor of border crossing. Science is sort of a cultural context. We have our unique way of doing things. And religion and church are a different context. And when you bridge them together, they don't seem very compatible sometimes. So this is the border crossing they're talking about. And then there was recently brand new two articles out from a couple of colleagues on cultural competence, helping professors at public universities better understand what a religious culture is like, what a Christian or even Muslim culture is like. And then finally, very recently, Barnes and Brunell have put out two articles in 2017 about introducing cultural competence into evolution education. So what do we do in the classroom? That's what I cared about. And that's what I wanted data on and evidence for. So show me the data. It's not out there. So that's where I came up with this initial research question. What are college science students' thoughts, ideas, and insights about the relationship between scientific issues that evoke controversies, and I got the biggies there, and Christian faith? What factors influence these thoughts, and how do their perceptions change? The reason I do this is in biology education research, basic science research, you come up with a theoretical perspective, and then you ground that theoretical perspective in what you're going to do. My perspective is social constructivism, and that students don't come to us with a blank slate. They have all these ideas they're bringing, and we got to figure out what those ideas are and then design around that. And so that's what I'm doing here. So my goal, my real personal goal, is that students would accept mainstream scientific positions on origins and evolution. That's my goal. That's most of our goal. But at a minimum, I wanted students to have a deep understanding of biological evolution, be versed in the evolution and faith dialogue, and have given serious thought to their own position on the issue before they graduate as a biology major. That's my goal. So I'm okay if they reject it, but I at least want them to have given a lot of thought to it. So I'm starting this out, like I said, it's a 10 to 15 year project. Started out with a survey, started collecting data, information about a variety of factors that the literature said might have an influence, the perceptions about science and religion. I also did interviews. When you get to biology education research, you really want to mix the interviews with the survey data to see if you're really, if there's an alignment between what they're writing down and what they're saying and what you're hearing them say when you can probe and investigate a little further. So I wanted to capture their perceptions and experiences about the issues that evoke controversy. What courses have they taken that talk about it? What activities have they engaged in that made them angry or were beneficial? What have they read? In fact, from one of the groups, they had been watching videos. The professor had used some little 10-minute video clips, anti-evolution video clips in the classroom. And what conversations have they had that were influential? And so instead of just asking the right paragraphs about this, I conducted interviews. So let me talk first about the survey, and then I'll hit you up on the interviews. Science and religion compatibility question. Took that from a variety of already verified sources. There were several questions about one's position on origins and evolution. And then there were three sets of questions measuring character traits. I'm trying to bring in some psychology here. Tolerance of ambiguity was a 13-item questionnaire. Openness was a 13-item inventory. And you may have remembered, probably not, from my lit research, openness was one of the things that aligned with acceptance of evolution. So I want to say, hey, is this really true? And then judgment, a 9-item. This is all from the psychology research. I'm not a psychologist, but I collaborated with a few to just use the right things. In 2015-16 and then the 16-17 school years, I used the survey on 223 students, freshmen and seniors primarily, freshmen, sophomores, and then seniors. I really need to do some juniors. This school year as well, I've collected probably another 100. I haven't analyzed them yet because we just ended last week. 85% of the freshmen were bio and chem majors, and 75% of all graduating bio and chem majors were surveyed. I want to give you one of the questions. This was one of the macroevolution acceptance scenarios. We got Casey and Alex. I borrowed this from my colleague, Aaron. Aaron, Amanda, help me out. Smith, thank you, at Cal Baptist. In my head, she's just Aaron. Casey and Alex were talking about what they believed about how different species originated. Casey believes that new species appeared over millions of years as a result of natural selection and evolutionary adaptation. Alex believes that species can evolve and change, but that they cannot become new species by natural processes, but that all species were at some point created by a higher power. Y'all with me on this question? Then I asked a variety of things to follow up. Do you agree with Casey's argument? And then you circle something. Do you agree with Alex's argument? And you circle something. Now, the assumption is that if you agree with Casey, you're going to disagree with Alex. And if you agree with Alex, you're going to disagree with Casey. Because one accepts and one rejects. That is not the case. But the way that I tried to figure out this nuance or this confusion was the scoring that I did. If you're certain Casey is wrong, you got a 5. And you're certain Casey is right, you got a 5. I mean, Alex is right, excuse me. So if you are absolutely, positively anti-macroevolution, you would have a 10 of a score. Does that make sense? If you are somewhere in between, you might be a 5 or a 6. That means you're just really confused. I would score a 1 on this, right, on the other way around. So this is how the scoring was done so that I could collect sort of this nuanced perspective of where they fall in the category. Then I also asked, can Casey and Alex be reconciled or can they both be right? And please explain why you think Casey and Alex's opinions can or cannot be reconciled. The reason I'm showing you this question is because there's some rather interesting data. First, I'm going to give you a moment to look at these graphs. I thought a lot about how to present this data. Later on, I'll show you using standard deviations, but here I did the top 25% of all the responses, the bottom 25%, and the middle. Okay, and this is the percentage on the y-axis over there, and I've got my freshmen or first-year students, second year, all college, third year, and then my seniors and super seniors. And what I want you to notice is that the big, huge, giant gray bar on the far right are okay with evolution, and the big, giant, huge blue bar on the far left are not okay with macroevolution. And it was just a kind of a lovely way to portray this shift going on in those 4 years. And what my research is trying to do is trying to capture this shift. What's helping it? What's harming it? Can we promote positive feelings towards evolution earlier on if we can figure out what these things are? The difference between each of these years is statistically significant. So I put this back up here because I'm going to give you some of the responses from those last two questions about Casey and Alex. A student says, yes, they can be reconciled with the assumption that God is in control of the natural processes that govern evolution, and he can allow or disallow things to happen. Okay, and so we found a correlation between two ways that I coded something. So here are the two codes, A and B, for kind of those answers. A, evolution can evolve from one species to another. You got a code A if you thought that or said anything related to that. And you got a code B, evolution exists with God governing the process. These are not mutually exclusive codes. I would be A and B. Some people might just be B. There were other codes as well. But I found a nice correlation. 0.45, which I've learned for social science research, is great. In biology, I wouldn't even put it up on the screen, right? But in social science, this is wonderful. So I'm learning to shift over. I thought that was nice, though, that at a Christian university, we've got students that are okay with evolution and seeing this as sort of God-governed process. But we found some things that were confusing to code. And I say we because I brought in three different undergraduates over a two-year period to help me code things. I think both theories of how species variation arose can be correct. New species can arise due to evolution and through speciation. But I also think God created each and every organism of each species. So perhaps God created all species and they've all evolved to their current form after years of adapting to the surrounding environments. So the first half is okay with macroevolution, the second half kind of isn't. So we're not really sure what to do with these kinds of responses. This is where interviews are fabulous, because you look at the kid and you ask 10 more questions, and then you figure out what they're really trying to say. And where surveys don't give us that kind of information. Some serious misunderstandings were revealed as well. Some species have adapted their environment, but to go to a cat from a dog is not possible. If it were, we would still be seeing the evolution of Casey's argument today. Cat to dog came up in 30% of responses that we coded. If you don't know, it's out there in some one of the is it Answers in Genesis? I'm not sure, but there's something about a cat-to-dog argument going on in there. Neither is 100% right. I believe God created every species and animal. Cats and dogs show evolution, but one just can't change into the other. So, yeah, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of work. We have a lot of work. Character traits were another thing I looked at. Remember the psychology I'm borrowing from the psych resources. I had three character traits I was interested in: tolerance of ambiguity, openness, and judgment. Judgment isn't anywhere here in this report of data because judgment showed non-statistical significance to anything at all. I had the very strangest results. A cognitive scientist that helped me with the statistics said this is just lame. So we just dumped it because it was not helpful. Tolerance of ambiguity and openness, I have these lovely curves for the scores. Basically, what you do is you use the surveys, the psychologists tell you how to score these surveys, and then you use this range of scores and you do kind of divide up how people are ranked in your population and talk about kind of the middle, the end, and the beginning. So I got a great spread here, and then I try to do some correlations here. I would have liked, if you look at the first yellow box right over here, I would have liked that to be a 1 or a point. Negative 0.9, because if you accept macroevolution, then you would reject creationism, or if you reject macroevolution, you'd accept creationism. you'd expect there to be a perfect negative correlation here, but there isn't, which was rather interesting as well. But 0.74 is great, which tells me at least that I'm measuring something. If this correlation was 0.1 or 0.2, then I would say none of my data at all is valuable, because acceptance and rejection should be negatively correlated. Yes, I'm not seeing any nods out there. Are you guys with me? Okay. Tolerance of ambiguity with evolution acceptance and openness with evolution acceptance is that first column in yellow. Anything in yellow is statistically significant. What we really see here that even interests me whatsoever is right here. Openness and tolerance of ambiguity are correlated, but not necessarily very strongly with acceptance or rejectance of evolution, which doesn't align very well with the data that exists out there in the literature. So I didn't know what to say there. I looked at the tolerance of ambiguity and the openness scores by year. So again, you have four columns, first year to fifth year, fourth and fifth year seniors. And this is divided up by standard deviation. And again, you see this interesting in the first graph. You see this really interesting spread where they score low on tolerance of ambiguity as freshmen. That's the blue bar. And the seniors are scoring much higher on tolerance of ambiguity, or my gray bar. The seniors have the highest gray bar, so they're more tolerant of ambiguity. Then you look at openness. No statistical significance whatsoever there. Everybody sort of, and basically what this tells me is that your openness doesn't shift or modify throughout your 4 years, as measured by this survey. Okay, as measured by the 13 questions in the openness survey. Maybe I don't like this survey, I'm not sure. So, tolerance of ambiguity and rejection of evolution are related. The more you reject evolution, the lower your tolerance of ambiguity. I'm not at all happy with a P of 0.07, but apparently psychology is okay with that. I'm not. Openness is related with acceptance of evolution, and the stepwise shows that this is all the power in the multi-regression. But the sad thing about openness, if I go back, is that it's not something that's changing throughout the 4 years, so it's not something that we may be able to have an impact on. Does that make sense? Openness is related to acceptance of evolution, but it doesn't seem like the openness is changing over the 4 years. Very interesting data. So what do I know from this quantitative data? Tolerance of ambiguity changes while in college. Openness appears to be static per the surveys that I used. Openness and acceptance of evolution are related. Tolerance of ambiguity and openness are related. So what do I do about teaching? This is a project about what do we teach and how do we help the students? So if students reject evolution, don't start with openness in the curriculum. Can't do openness first if this survey is measuring anything because they have no tolerance of ambiguity yet. So openness curriculum isn't going to work. Start with ambiguity promotion. Help them to tolerate some ambiguity, tolerate the gray areas, right? And then shift to openness later on, hoping that that teaches us something. So, okay, I'm going to give you a little bit of information about the interview data, all right? What factors, this is my goal, courses, activities, readings, conversations influence students' perception? Is there anything that motivated them to seek to deepen their faith and explore the interface? Did anything about science and religion supplement or diminish the work performed within their majors? And is there anything that enhanced their theological understandings? Right? Because if there was, and we can learn what this is, then we can start doing it earlier in the training, and we can have a larger impact early on. We can do it with these freshman majors that are in ministry and help them with these conversations. 24 semi-structured clinical interviews. If you don't know what that is, you sit with a person for about an hour. You ask a variety of different questions. You have a set of questions that you're going to go through, but you have a lot of follow-up questions along the way. You record all these, video record and audio record, and then you transcribe them, which takes forever. Then you try to code them, and coding takes up to a year at times because you create codes, and you see if they fit more interviews, and then you modify codes again to see if they fit more interviews, an emergent coding scheme, and it's complicated and sort of a pain in the butt. But this is what you do with interviews, which is why you don't see a lot of interview research out there. A couple things I learned from the interview, so I'm going to kind of distill it down to take-home messages that I got. Kids that were, all these three are kids that reconcile evolution, and this is all forms of evolution, including human evolution, with their faith, or kids that are trying to reconcile it. One, they just talked about, they seemed to boldly pursue truth. They didn't seem to shy away or hide from. So I truly believe everything on earth is God ordained, but explaining the hows, that's what I want to learn more about. On pursuing science, a student said, I think it's just the act of doing it faithfully, diving super into a topic and saying, we are in this to understand more of the creation. Ultimately, I believe our understanding of the world drives us deeper toward our understanding of God through creation. Because if he was in charge of creation, everything would point towards him. Boldly pursuing, right? I'm not going to shy away from investigation. This other student says, for me, science is so intricate with genetics and cellular functions. For me, it just glorifies what God can do. It is along the lines of, I love God. I love science. My friends and I would start talking about science and we would say, God is so cool. We would acknowledge the fact that science was right and God was involved in that and was responsible. Right? Analytic approach to knowledge. I'm hunting right now in my research. I'm hunting for a way to describe this. I'm using the word analytic. A colleague of mine at Point Loma said, maybe it's really systematic. I didn't really like that. Somebody else says, it sounds like these students are humble or have humility, that they don't know everything. So I'm really struggling with the title for what this category is, but let me give you some of the quotes. I feel there's a responsibility for me to seek out ways to learn more about environmental stewardship, even just in reading, where it's not a specific person telling you anything. It's within a book and it's within a journal. I did ask some questions at the end of my interviews about environmental stewardship and creation care. On accepting evolution, this person wrote, it took my own effort of seeing the other perspectives and seeing and understanding and wrestling with it sometimes into the evening. That's taking ownership, right? There's something I have to learn about this. Last one. The part that makes me feel uncomfortable talking about science and faith is that I have a lot more research and learning to do myself. So it's hard for me when I feel that I am not that knowledgeable, but being able to make a stance on every scientific argument. So when somebody tells me they don't believe in this because of this, and I have a different viewpoint, I would like more to say to have more sort of validity and not be subjective in my opinion. I don't feel well read enough to do that in every case. So that's the part that makes me uncomfortable. So what's interesting about this is a variety of questions we asked, things like, how would you feel if your church contacted you and asked you to come and talk about science and faith to the church, to the congregation? How do you feel if your friends in the dorm want to have a conversation about science and faith? How would you feel if your mom and dad wanted to ask you questions about evolution and your Christianity? We asked them things like that, and they talked about that. And so an analytic approach is contrasted with an authoritative approach. So we do have quite a few interviews where they say, you know, the pastor says, you can't accept evolution. That was the whole sentence. So an authoritative approach is in contrast to this, where I want to dig more, I want to learn more, I want to understand more. It's up to me to understand it. I need to figure it out myself. So I'm still kind of working on this one. The third one and final one, role models, broadening your sphere of influence. This seems to be huge. I heard it in the first talk that you guys did. I heard it in the talk earlier today with, was it Bruce, the pastor? Is about role models make a huge, huge difference for these students. We were looking at cells and my teacher showed us videos and he was talking about how this really renowned atheist became a Christian, all because of science. He was like, look at these, they're little machines in your body. Look at their structure. Look at how they're moving. How does that? There's no way. It just happens. I always knew that science was way back up to faith. They were talking, the context of this was talking about the influence of the professors on how they've come to reconcile science with their faith. On the Christian guidance of her professor, my professors are really dedicated to applying the knowledge to our faith and showing how to do that. Even though it's sometimes frustrating, they do it so that we understand. That's what I really appreciate. And finally, I worked with Dr. Chemistry for summer research. She's very, very into this kind of thing, this science and faith integration. So hearing her beliefs, it kind of forced me to consider a new belief. So it seems that surrounding yourselves with a community that's okay with science and faith seems to make a huge difference for these students. And so the person speaking a couple of times ago talked about finding a mentor in the church. So you find a youth, college student or high school student interested in science, and we hook them up with a scientist in the church to help them, because that scientist has figured out ways to reconcile science with their faith. And it's also found some of this in the most recent research that has been done in 2017. So what do I now know? I have a ton of information. So when you collect survey data and interview data, you just have gobs of information to get through without a lot of money to hire people to help you. We've been quite successful at Point Loma Nazarene in helping students reconcile science evolution with their faith specifically. The majority of seniors in the sciences are leaving both accepting evolution and having faith in the religiosity measure. So that's exciting for us. It wasn't necessarily the case at the other university I looked at, rejecting evolution but maintaining their faith. Time to go out there and look for teaching activities that might exist for promoting tolerance of ambiguity. I'm guessing maybe the psychology research, since they have surveys for measuring this thing, hopefully they have some things out there that they suggest doing to promote tolerance of ambiguity. I don't know. Can we even promote openness? Is there another survey for openness that I can use? Is openness really static? Do you really just come in as a freshman with a level of openness and that's just how you are? Either not open or open to other ideas? That's depressing if that's the case. So I'm not willing to accept that yet. So I went more. I need money to do more research. And I would love other universities that even if we don't have any money, we can still survey and interview and take forever to analyze our data together, especially if you're at a conservative institution that maybe doesn't promote evolution, even though you might be okay with it. Would love to work with you and have surveys go out to your freshman and senior and see what kind of findings they have. So I would like to thank the funding source. I did have some funding from the Oxford Interdisciplinary Seminars that I was part of for a couple of summers. And my undergrads, my cute little 19 and 20-year-olds that helped me analyze data and learn how to code and do all that. So I'd love to answer questions if you have any. Oh, I have it. Here you go.
Thank you, April, very much. Can you tell me what you mean by openness?
Exactly. Where's the oldest in the room? I need you. Openness had to do with... Stinkers loud. Openness had to do with open to new ideas. And it was interesting, I wish I had some of the questions here available for you. Questions like, I like to read about things I don't agree with. I like to have conversations with people that don't have the same position I have on issues. Strongly agree, strongly disagree. Those kinds of, does that help?
Yeah, a little bit. So I teach in a seminary, and our seminary curriculum is a core integrated curriculum where they go through in over 2 years the history of Christianity from the Bible to the 21st century. It's interdisciplinary. Students come in having never talked to somebody from another denomination. They come in and they understand the full ecumenical tradition and they become open. But it doesn't happen at the beginning, but by the end, they actually value the complexity of the Christian tradition because they read church fathers, they read medieval theologians, they read the women mystics, they read the reformers, they read the social gospel, they read everything, and they understand that Christianity is diverse and there isn't one opinion, but there is an ecumenical orthodoxy. But I mean, no studies have been done on how this works, but the people get, one of the main things they like about a seminary by the end is say, I understand the diversity of opinion that's valid.
So what I think, I'd love to do two things. One, I'd love to use this 13 questionnaire in that when you intuitively know there's an openness that occurs, is this questionnaire actually measuring that? Because if it's not, I want to throw it out. Okay. Second, if it's not measuring that, we need to find a survey that does measure this thing that we know is existing, this value.
So let me connect you to the head of research for our ministry area. He has a PhD in psychology, and he loves to do these kinds of
things. Love it. I want to talk to him. Thank you.
openness is one of most of the great people.
Yes, it is. It's one of the big five.
Yeah. One of the big five personality traits that are in vogue right now. It's been a distillation process over the past 60, 70 years. So what you're actually looking at with that particular scale is what is considered to be a more or less fairly static personality trait. What you're going for, I think, what you're aiming to draw may be found through other instruments, but that one might not work quite as well because what you saw is about what you're going to see because of the nature of the instrumentation.
Okay. I'm glad to know that. Yeah.
Just a comment and then two questions, and you can take whatever you want. The first comment is, I mean, in Canada, this may be different than America. I assume that you're in America.
Yeah, California, San Diego, California.
In Canada, it seems that most students, if they're going to go to a Christian school, which there's really very few options, outside, especially a Bible college, they're going to not be open. The purpose of going is actually to get away from a place that you would go. Right.
Agreed. So, same with ours.
Is it? Okay. So I don't know. That's just a comment. I thought it was interesting, but great for you guys for creating tolerance for ambiguity. So the two questions I have, the first is if you were just to riff and give us some thoughts, even though you said, show me the data, you don't have it.
Yep.
So riff a bit, what are you doing that helps create tolerance of ambiguity? Number one. The second question is just, did you do any looking at ethnic diversity throughout? I don't know what the ethnic profile is of your school, but I would wonder about that as well. So two questions for you.
Yeah. And this particular survey, I didn't actually do demography. Our university is about 40%, 39%, 41% Hispanic. We're right there at this border, San Diego. And then for the most part, Euro white. For the other 60%. And that's reflected in our biology majors as well. We might be a little higher in the Hispanic category. I didn't notice any differences but that's anecdotal and not numbers driven. As far as tolerance of ambiguity, it seems to be happening by the end of their freshman year and the beginning of sophomore year, the numbers have changed quite a bit. And it's primarily in the evolution and ecology course. So not only do we teach evolution and ecology, and I struggle with this a lot. I'm a biology professor, and my job is to teach the biology. So if I'm going to take different days out of my curriculum, an hour here, an hour there, out of the biology to teach other things, I really wrestle with that, but I do it. I have them read a book, the Origins book by Harzma and Harzma, before we even start talking about evolution. They've read the chapters 2 through 8 and chapter 10. Then they write a conversation day one before the class starts or the first night of homework. They write a conversation about somebody with an alternate view. And I give them the first two sentences of the conversation and they have to write the back and forth. Then after we're about 2/3 of the way through the evolution unit, they actually have to go back. They do a reading on being hospitable, what hospitable dialogue looks like and conversation looks like. We have an entire 1 hour conversation in class about the hardest questions. And then they analyze their own conversation that they wrote and they rewrite it. We do a variety of other things about the value of what you can gain by hearing other perspectives and viewpoints. And talk about the way it feels when others disagree with you and interrogate you as opposed to ask you. We talk about debate versus dialogue, all that in my class, which is a biology class. But it's got to happen, and I don't want these kids to give up their faith. I did. I went atheist for a while. So I don't want that to happen to them. So it's really about holding them in our hands as we sort of nurture them through. That's the goal. Our time is up. Our time is up. Okay, last question. Talk quick. I know, they're loud.
It's a quick one. I'm just wondering, in your survey instrument, is one demographic variable anything related to program of study, et cetera?
Yes, so these were all science students, both at Cal Baptist and at Point Loma Nazarene, both Southern California universities. Cal Baptist is negotiable on their stance on evolution.
Just a quick thought about one variable that, from my experience, I think could be fairly significant, is to look at something like cumulative credit hours in the humanities.
Yeah, for openness. Right?
If someone is, right? Yes, for openness, yes. Ambiguity, If someone has had 12 credit hours of philosophy, that'd be very different in your class than, right?
100% agree. And how many of the biblical studies and theology classes have they had? And the seniors have had a lot. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.